Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this edition of the Amazing Clubhouse podcast. I'm site editor Rick Laughlin, and joining me right now is contributing writer Scott Thompson, knows the team exceptionally well. We're going to discuss the final stretch for the Mets heading into the All-Star break, address some of the trade rumors, injury news surrounding the team. But first and foremost, I'd like to introduce Scott Thompson, a contributor to Amazing Clubhouse and very knowledgeable about the Mets. How are you doing today, Scott?
Great. Great to be here. And a lot of Mets news going on today, you know, especially with all these injuries going on that we'll talk about. But it's great to finally be part of this Mets podcast we've been talking about for a while. And luckily, you know, Scott got to deal with iHeartRadio. So great to be here today.
Yeah, and Scott mentioned it. So, you know, now Scout has made it official that the iHeartRadio is now the official partner, podcast partner of Amazing Clubhouse. So if you feel free to go on to iHeartRadio, if you enter in the search bar Mets, our podcast will come under those search terms, and we're looking to grow our listening audience. So with that, I'm going to start talking a little bit about the Mets. Obviously, they're coming off now a two-game series sweep over the defending world champion Kansas City Royals, and while Mets fans were absolutely thrilled with the performance of their team, that for much of the past couple of months, it seems to have been up and down, more down than up, frankly, for the most part. Even with this two-game series sweep, it didn't come without some bad news, principally regarding Noah Syndergaard, who left in the sixth inning with elbow tightness, and then as well as Yoenis Cespedes, who had wrist tightness. It's still unclear as far as what the prognosis for either one of those players are. But Scott, I mean, any Met fan has to admit, I mean, if there are two players that you would say the Mets probably can't contend without, it would probably be Yoenis Cespedes on offense, and then in that pitching staff, Noah Syndergaard, the way he's pitching. How do you see, again, obviously not playing the role of doctor, we don't know the severity of the injury, but do you think the Mets can sustain, you know, a loss of either or both of these players if they're out for an extended period of time?
I don't at all. I mean, you look at Noah Syndergaard, who's been, without a doubt, I think the ace of this pitching staff so far, with Matt Harvey still trying to find his way around. Steven Matz and DeGrom are a little bit shaky now. Syndergaard has been the rock for this rotation. And if there is anything that kicks him off of the rotation, the Mets need to worry. And looking into it today, he had some discomfort, quote-unquote, in the back of his right elbow. He got some anti-inflammatory meds, and it says that he should be resuming, you know, normal time. But any time you hear elbow with a pitcher, your eyes light up and you start to think, you know, what could possibly happen. I mean, take Zach Wheeler, for instance. But Noah Syndergaard especially will be, I think, a very, very big loss for the Mets if he is to sit out.
And the other player, again, in this Kansas City Royals series, despite the season sweep of them, or I should say they took three out of four this season, the only loss coming in that season opener were basically the Mets had to watch the Royals celebrate their 2015 World Series. So you can imagine the energy levels are riding high at Kauffman Stadium. But for the Mets, it has to be a good feeling, and probably just a small token of redemption to actually beat this team three out of four times. Obviously, a lot of Mets fans wish that transpired back in October of 2015. But whatever the case may be, we talked about the injury to Syndergaard as well as Cespedes. You know, by most estimates, it doesn't look like it's going to keep them out for a prolonged period of time. But obviously, again, we've seen stranger things have happened. Even with this Mets season coming off the National League Championship, with all the positivity surrounding the team, it seems like there's just a dark cloud of injury bug that's been plaguing them, whether it's Lucas Duda with his fractured back. He's still not approved for baseball activity, still just really riding the bike to try to get himself back to 100%. David Wright undergoing the neck surgery, which, again, you know, in all likelihood, he will miss the remainder of the campaign. They haven't said that officially yet, but you'd imagine with everything he's battling with his back and then to have this neck injury to boot, I mean, that's asking a lot for a player to come back from that. And then to make matters worse, Bartolo Colon, who only threw four pitches in his start against the Kansas City Royals before he took a hard line drive off his thumb. I mean, when you saw the replay of that, that looked like that could be a potential season ender. And then the news comes out basically yesterday that Terry Collins expects Bartolo Colon to make his next start. I mean, even on the telecast, you heard Gary Cohen and Keith Hernandez and even Ron Darling say, that there's no way that he's not going to land on the disabled list. And you see Bartolo Colon is now 43 years old. I mean, he's a guy that's almost discovered the fountain of youth. How lucky are the Mets to have not only an innings eater like this at Colon, but at the age of 43 to be so durable? I mean, I don't think I've heard of or seen a player that has this kind of durability, especially at that age.
I mean, he's exceeding all expectations. He's been throwing quality innings, going at least five or six each time. That two-seam that has been money for him, that's his career maker, is still there. And at 43 years old, if you're still hitting 91, 92 miles an hour, that is absolutely insane. I mean, we saw his show at the plate at Petco Park. I mean, this guy has been a rejuvenator for the Mets. And to these young guys, they're looking up to him, saying that this is what we could be one day. But like you said, he takes a line drive off of his thumb. He's been doing well all season long, and this could be, you know, the first setback in his campaign so far. They said the swelling went down in his thumb. There hasn't been any structural damage from the X-rays. But, I mean, if Colon's gone and, you know, you have the possibility of Syndergaard getting out, I mean, these are two guys that have been throwing great for these for this Mets team. And especially in Colon's case, at 43 years old, he wants to keep on going. And, you know, he's been a really big part, especially with Zach Wheeler out.
And you look at this Mets team, obviously having their struggles. You take a glance at the standings, the Washington Nationals, uncharacteristically, they've lost their last five games. The Mets are now just two games back of them in the loss column in the NL East. And it's really even hard to fathom based on the baseball they've been playing prior to this two-game sweep of the Kansas City Royals. Frankly, they weren't playing their best baseball by any stretch of the imagination. But there's been a lot of rumors circulating. What is this team going to do, especially on the offensive side of the ball, to upgrade the team? One of the names that's been thrown out there is a former Met, a fan favorite, Jose Reyes, you know, is due to become a free agent this Saturday and could be a player that the Mets could pick up for cheap. The question remains, I mean, clearly his skills have been diminished. He's not the same player that he once was when he was stealing 60-plus bases with the Mets in 2006-2007 seasons. But if you're the Mets, does it make sense to take a flyer on a player like Jose Reyes that, again, is not going to string up their cap from any standpoint? Does it make sense for Sandy Alderson to say that maybe they'll bring him in to give him a chance to kind of reclaim the fame that he had back in the mid-2000s with the Mets? Or should they, you know, maybe pass and kind of look to maybe a Dilson Herrera to fill in at second base and move Neil Walker to third base and try to reshuffle their infield that way? What are your thoughts on the potential Jose Reyes reunion?
I mean, looking at it, for me at least, I looked at it from two different sides. From a manager standpoint in Terry Collins and, you know, a general manager with Sandy Alderson. If you're looking at it from Collins' point of view, you can kick Neil Walker over to third base and you can put Jose Reyes at second base. And you have Jubal Cabrera and Jose Reyes who, though they both have a little bit, you know, lost their step since their primes, they are still exceptional middle infielders. And those two together could be a great tandem for the Mets. And looking at it from, you know, a general manager and owner's aspect, you have a guy coming back that was your star next to David Wright in those mid-2000s, as you brought up. And you want to talk about ticket sales, about people coming out to see the reunion of Jose Reyes with the New York Mets. I mean, I think it would be a win-win for the team. But you also got to look at, you know, his character aspect. I mean, Sandy Alderson said that we balance, you know, both the athletic ability of these players and their character. And with the whole domestic violence case and everything circling around that, you know, Sandy Alderson is, you know, a little bit hesitant to pull the trigger, but I think it would be a win-win for this team if Reyes could come back and prove to the Mets himself that, you know, he is still ready to play. I mean, he was, you know, batting in the mid-200s with the Rockies last season, you know, before everything happened. So, you know, I think it would be pretty good for this team.
And it's funny because Jose Reyes, during his tenure with the Mets, was nothing but a standout citizen. I mean, if there's one criticism of him, he was a bit of a showman. You know, a lot of players and a lot of opponents took exception to him maybe showing up opposing pitchers on the field. But aside from that, I mean, he was well-liked in the clubhouse. He was a guy that was terrific with the media. He had this unfortunate incident, obviously, with the domestic violence. And you mentioned that's going to come in to play because Sandy Alderson, you know, he's stressing getting good character guys in the locker room. And up until that point, Reyes had certainly had an unmarked resume. But again, you have to take that into consideration that the Mets now, instead of answering questions about how they're going to catch the Nationals in the NL East and make another push for a National League pennant, then all of a sudden the conversation shifts to Jose Reyes and is it going to be a problem in the locker room and how is this domestic violence dispute going to be resolved? So that's something that the Mets front office and ownership definitely have to keep in mind. It's funny because Reyes, you know, in his last year in 2011, coming off the batting title, makes the Mets really made no offer or no effort to try to re-sign him. He ultimately signed with the Miami Marlins. That was part of their rebranding to try to open that new ballpark, generate a buzz in that stadium, and that was pretty short-lived. I mean, he had the one short year with the Miami Marlins, was not very much productive at all. And then you mentioned 3 years with Toronto before joining the Colorado Rockies midway through last season. And, you know, again, whether it's his skills have diminished, I don't think there's any way that you can deny that. But it seems like Reyes would be the type of player that if he's going to succeed anywhere and he's going to at least try to get something left out of himself for the rest of his career, I would think the only place where he probably would be planted and do well would be back with the Mets, back in New York. He still maintains a home here. I mean, from a lot of standpoints, it makes a lot of sense if the Mets are able to just find a way not to make this more of a distraction and see if it can help them on the field. The one thing I will say, I know you mentioned about reshuffling that infield. I mean, we saw going back to the 2005 season when the Mets had Kazuo Matsui and they tried the experiment of putting Jose Reyes at second base. That was just an absolute headache. So I think you start kind of toying with that idea. You're going to start to draw the ire of Mets fans by moving Reyes to second and Walker to third, even though I don't think it's a terrible idea. I still think if you're messing with that middle infield, combination of Cabrera as well as Walker, that's been nothing short of brilliant this year. You are risking something, but again, they need that offensive spark. They need some athleticism and some speed on the base pass. And while Reyes isn't the player that he used to be, I think he can certainly bring that to the table.
And I think also that, there needs to be some push comes to shove. I mean, you got to see what Jose Reyes can give you if you do sign him. There's a lot more pros, I think, than cons in signing him. You said getting him cheap. He wants to be in New York, obviously. This is where his glory days were, and if he wants to finish out his career, it would obviously be here. But Ajubel Cabrera has played second base. I mean, if he needs to, you could put him at third, but I don't see that being plausible at all. But I think if you do get Jose Reyes, it's not that big of a deal when you think, you have two great players at your middle infield, and Neil Walker has had some third base, time. There have been some rumors that the Mets might look at Danny Valencia from the Athletics, who's hitting, 304 right now. You talk about an offensive spark, that would be exactly it. But if you can get Jose Reyes and he can give you that spark for a lot less than what you would get Danny Valencia for, I think there's a lot more pros in getting Jose Reyes and bringing him back to the Big Apple.
And it's funny, this is a Mets offense that, let's face it, I mean, they're really swinging for the fences, no pun intended. I mean, they're producing, all of their runs are coming by the home run. They're not manufacturing any. They don't have, as I alluded to, the team speed like they did in the mid-2000s with Jose Reyes. So they're really a one-trick pony from an offensive standpoint. You mentioned some of those names of Valencia. One, for me, the glaring weakness of this team is obviously hitting with runners in scoring position and just manufacturing runs and getting on base. How much do you think, if Reyes isn't the answer at the shortstop position, what do you see as a move that, and again, this is obviously a nine-man lineup. I don't think one man can necessarily change the whole complexion of an offense, but at least one guy that can be a table setter, because we've seen, as of right now, Curtis Granderson's been in the leadoff spot. If you were to ask anybody, is he a prototypical leadoff guy? Absolutely not, but he's probably the Mets' best option that they have at this point. And again, I allude to the fact that I think that Reyes, while he's a diminished player, brings that intangible aspect that he does inspire a little fear on the base pass. And you look up and down this lineup, maybe you could say Juan Lagares has some speed, although he's not a prototypical base stealer. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, I mean, you don't have anybody, maybe Alejandro de Haza, and probably that's about it, anybody that's going to just manufacture some runs for this team. And you have to imagine that this team is going to contend late into September, get in October baseball, and perhaps contend for a World Series. I mean, they can't be so reliant on the home runs just to carry the offense. I would think they would need a guy that's a high on-base percentage, base stealer to manufacture some runs.
I think Collins needs to, look at what, the options that he has down in the minor leagues. You brought up Dylson Herrera, who has some speed. Outfielder Brandon Nimmo, who right now is in minor leagues, he could be a potential to come up. He does have some speed. He can hit for extra base hits as well. And like you said, there aren't just, it isn't just base running that I think they need. I think it's just fundamentals itself, getting players in position, sack bunting, putting people at second base. You have the power. Obviously, we see home runs from Reynolds and Cabrera these past couple games. I think it's going to come down to bringing in sort of that, Kansas City Royals mentality like they had in the World Series last year, where you need to use those fundamentals, to kind of get these runners across the plate without having to launch a ball 415 feet. I think that it can come down to Collins dipping into, the minor leagues, bringing some of these players up and seeing what they can give you, especially on the base paths. But I think that, Dylson Herrera could get a shot, Brandon Nimmo could get a shot, and Matt Reynolds, if he keeps producing, maybe he can, steal a couple bags and really help this Mets team right now.
And you alluded to the fundamentals, which I think have been really lacking from this team, and you mentioned maybe it's a trickle-down effect from Terry Collins not emphasizing it enough, but also the personnel. I mean, going back even to that National League Championship team from 2015, the Mets clearly moved on from Daniel Murphy. I mean, he's tearing the cover off the baseball with the Washington Nationals, which is making a lot of Mets fans kind of a little regretful for that move. But obviously, the way Neil Walker started the season, I mean, he's been slow of late, obviously hobbled by some of those back issues, but he's filled in nicely. He's been just such a defensive upgrade beyond what Daniel Murphy was able to give them. Obviously, in Jesus Familia blowing three saves in that World Series, I mean, you could at least pin two of those on the defensive ineptitude of the Mets. And we've seen how much that strong defense up the middle has helped them with Walker, as I mentioned, and Cabrera. And then also the one thing that I've noticed with TJ Rivera filling in as well as Kevin Pilecki for Travis d'Arnaud. I mean, d'Arnaud, when he's going offensively, is a great hitting catcher. He's a guy that brings a lot to the table offensively. The problem the Mets are going to have is the Mets pitchers, whether it's Noah Syndergaard, DeGrom, Harvey, even Matz as a left-hander, they don't hold runners on bases very well at all. Teams are basically running at will. You saw the Kansas City Royals just exploit that last October. And when you have the combination of a pitching staff, while they're power pitchers, they get a lot of strikeouts, they're not going to obviously have a lot of inherited runners on base. But when people do reach, they're able to run and run effectively. You have to have a catcher that's able to pick runners off and be able to throw them out. And I don't think d'Arnaud is that guy. And I think given the fact that he just came back from injury this week, I think the Mets are going to see how he's looking, if he's healthy. But in my mind, I don't see him as the long-term solution, a catcher. Obviously, one of the names that's been bantered about has been Jonathan Lucroy with the Milwaukee Brewers. I think he's going to be a highly coveted guy when the trade deadline approaches. I don't know if the asking price is going to be too high for him. Do you think that the Mets would look at the catcher position at possibly a Lucroy or another option to fill in d'Arnaud? Because, as I said, I think the book is out that the Mets pitchers don't hold on runners very well, and certainly d'Arnaud is incapable of throwing out runners. So that combination, to me, could prove to be pretty deadly if the Mets are contending in the postseason.
Yeah, you basically said it all, and I think they have to look into the catching position at the All-Star break. You brought up Jonathan Lucroy. He's hitting .305 right now, which is, a lot more than his career average at .284. So Lucroy is definitely an option. His price might be a little bit high, but when you look at your pitchers, I mean, I got to see it against the Cincinnati Reds. d'Arnaud was catching, Syndergaard was pitching, and I was down that first base line. And four people, including Billy Hamilton, of course, just waltzed basically to second and third base because Syndergaard doesn't have a slide step. Matz doesn't really use that left arm well enough, in trying to, deceive runners and keep them on first base. They're basically running at whim, and d'Arnaud doesn't have the arm to catch up with these guys. And I think Luke Roy could be a pretty good, you know, addition to this team because he is extremely defensive. He keeps runners on. He isn't scared to throw back to runners, especially at first base. He is a very good snap throw. With that .305 batting average and you bring up 10 home runs, 14 doubles, this guy could be the offensive spark this team needs as well.
And we've been talking finding that offensive spark. Obviously, Cespedes has been a mainstay in that lineup. He's had some couple of nagging injuries, whether it's the bruised thigh, now with the wrist. But for the most part, he has been healthy and produced and been the typical cleanup hitter that the Mets are looking for. Walker, as I mentioned, had a very strong month of April and May, tailed off in June. Seems like the back has been an issue. That was one of the issues that the Pirates had about locking him up long-term while the Mets made the trade for him, was that they thought that he did have some chronic back issues that maybe would hold him back later on in his career. So you're hoping, if you're a Met fan, obviously he's here now on a one-year rental. You don't know what his future is beyond this year, but you would hope that he would get himself healthy and right for this stretch run after the All-Star break. For me, one of the players that's been the most disappointing, and it's odd to say it because he's only 23 years old. He's now in his – he only has basically 119 games under his belt. Michael Conforto, who just burst onto the scene last year in 56 games. He had 9 home runs and 26 RBI. But you look at his 2016 campaign, you thought he's going to make that next step. I mean, he hit a home run in the World Series, was a player that looks like he's going to be a mainstay on this team for at least the next decade. He has 63 games played right now, has 10 home runs and 30 RBIs, which is nothing to sneeze at. But, I mean, he's been in an epic type of slump. I'm wondering if it's whether the scouting report is now out on him because he's had some big league experience that pitchers are really staying away from him down in the zone, trying to make him chase pitches. What do you make of Michael Conforto's struggles and, frankly, some of his comments about, I can't say that I would fault him because the Mets were considering maybe sending him down for some work on his mechanics and getting his swing right. He didn't seem like that was something that he was willing to do. I'm sure if he was asked to do it, he would. But he wants to be up with this big league club. But how long can the Mets stay patient with him if he's not producing in the middle of that lineup? Do you think that eventually he'll come around? Or do you think it maybe is the better route for him to try to maybe hone his skills in the minor leagues for a couple of weeks and then get back ready to go?
I think most of his problems was that, you know, he got to that hot start, in April where he led the team in average extra base hits. He was roping the ball. But like you said, the cat might be out of the bag at this point. You're keeping him down in the zone. You're throwing him a lot of off speed, which he's been having trouble with the curveball and that changeup away from him down and away. But I don't think that sending him down would be able to fix his mechanics. I think that Kevin Long is one of the best hitting coaches in the entire game. I mean, being a Yankee fan myself, you know, I've seen Kevin Long and I've seen how he's changed Curtis Granderson from his Yankee days to his Mets days and how he shortened up his swing. And I think that Conforto has a very long swing and that he really needs to shorten that up if he wants to make solid contact. I mean, that long swing obviously helped him in that month of April. He was roping the ball on all cylinders. And now that he's not getting good contact, I feel like he's swinging a lot harder, trying to jump on the first pitch. The pitchers are throwing them that off speed and not even giving him a fastball to work with. I don't think that sending him down would help him. I think at this point you say, you know, he is 23 and he's had World Series experience. He did well in the postseason last year. This guy wants to be in the big leagues as long as he possibly can, and he wants to help his team. I think it's just going to come down to him focusing on getting those quality at-bats, maybe shortening up that long swing that he's got. It's very loopy, really bringing it into the zone. And I think that when everything starts to settle out, maybe over the All-Star break and get some time to look into some more film. But I think that he can be a big part for this team in the second half of the season.
And the one thing you have to take into consideration is that Conforto did not look fazed by the big moment in October. I mean, he was one of the biggest producers for the Mets over that playoff run. So, I mean, for a guy that was at 23 at that point, to have that wherewithal and poise in such a big moment, I mean, you can't as you mentioned, you can't give up on him after just 110 odd games and a recent slump.
Yep.
I mean, he just has to kind of play through it. And I tend to agree with you. I think by sending him down, that may send the wrong message, because he's a guy that's going to be here to stay, and a guy that frankly is going to be, could be a cornerstone of this team, especially with what's happening with David Wright, with his return, not only for this season, but I mean, for his career, very much in the air. I mean, you don't know what you're going to get out of him. Conforto is one of those guys, along with Syndergaard. You don't know the future Yoenis Cespedes because of the, on the 1 year opt out he has after this season. So Conforto
very
could be
true.
A guy that you would exactly, you know, so he could be a guy that would be a player for the next decade for them. So they have to be kind of treat that with kid gloves, I would say, with Michael Conforto, and let him work with Kevin Long, try to, as you mentioned, shorten up that swing, not fall so much in love with the home run, and see if the results will follow that. One of the things for me, as I mentioned, one of the biggest disappointments has been Michael Conforto, mostly as of late. But for me, one of the most pleasant surprises has been that Mets bullpen. I think they've pitched really above anybody's expectations. I mean, you look at the combination of Addison Reed, Antonio Bastardo, Jim Henderson, unfortunately, just landed on the DL. Doesn't look to be out long term. But Jerry Blevins, Hansel Robles, who came in and filled in for Clone after four pitches, basically pitched brilliantly against the Royals. And then Familia, who's 24 of 24 for saves this year. He got two, what I thought were much needed confidence boosting saves against the Royals, a team that he blew three saves against last year in the World Series. I mean, if you want to talk about this Mets bullpen, and that was one of the things last year at the trade deadline, they were really looking for some help when they signed, when they got Tyler Clippard as well as Addison Reed. Do you think the Mets need to make any big changes in that bullpen, or is it one of these situations where they can kind of, you know, let these guys, let the season play out, see what happens, and kind of roll with the guys they have and look at other positions, principally third base and potentially at first base to upgrade the team?
Yeah, I always thought it was hard for, you know, bullpen pitchers to really settle on one team. And that's why I think that the Mets could always, you know, shop certain guys to focus on certain things, whether it is a lefty specialist. But, you know, Bastardo has been there so far this year, but he has been a tiny bit shaky. He has sort of come back. But I think you can always make improvements to your bullpen, especially at the trade deadline, shopping different guys, seeing – you know, who you face more, who these guys maybe on different teams have faced in the NL East, and seeing, you know, if they can go against these players. But I think that your solid guys in Jeris Familia, Hansel Robles made a huge, huge case for himself in his innings against the Royals on Tuesday. I mean, striking out six in about three innings or so. I mean, he has done a great job for the team. You brought up Jeris Familia. Obviously, he's not going anywhere, but he needs to keep that confidence high if this team wants to keep on going into the postseason. But I don't think that Shane Alderson is going to back away from the bullpen. I think that you can always swap out your guys and change it and always make it more firm. I mean, looking at Tyler Clippard in the second half that they got last year, they used him a lot more than they really wanted to, but he did a great job for this team. And I think that Shane Alderson can definitely do the same after the All-Star break.
I know we only have a minute or so before we're going to wrap up here. I'm going to take a quick look at the remaining schedule before the All-Star break. The Mets have four games beginning tonight in Atlanta, followed by a three-game set in Washington. Then they host the Chicago Cubs for four games, followed by a three-game set with the Marlins, and then they finish up before the All-Star break, a four-game homestand against the Washington Nationals. I'm going to ask you two quick questions, and we only have about 30, 40 seconds. Do you think that the Mets, now two games back in the loss column, could potentially catch the Nationals and the NL East based on that schedule, as tough as it does look?
Absolutely. I think that you have to look at what the Nationals have done in these past couple of years. I mean, they have been riding high going to the All-Star break, and it could very well be third time's a charm heading into the second half of the season. They have had that time where they just drop off, and the Mets took advantage of that last season. I don't see why not. It could be the second year straight. But you talk about the toughness of the schedule, I think this team itself is tough. It's laden with a bunch of veterans. I mean, talk about these injuries. But I don't think it's going to be that much of an issue for this team. They're going to get Zach Wheeler back in the second half. I think he's going to play a huge part in keeping that rotation solid as it has been all season. It's all about runs in the MLB. As me and you both know, the Mets made a huge run last year, and I honestly don't see why they can't do it again. They have the team. They just can't seem to be putting, you know, offense and defense on both sides of the ball in, you know, that much of a in that much of a stretch, so to speak. So I think that they can settle down, really take a team goal and be like, listen, we need to at least make a wild card spot. But we can take over the Nationals. We have beaten them this season. We have the pitching. We have the offense. I don't see why the Mets can't take the division for the second straight year.
Well, Scott, I want to thank you again for your time and your insights. Feel free to listen to us throughout the season. Thanks for tuning in for our pre-All-Star Break podcast, and we'll be talking to you soon. Feel free to find us on iHeartRadio. If you search Mets, you'll find us at AmazingClubhouse.com. Thanks so much, and have a nice day, everyone. Bye for now.